Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett, former Real Housewife of Potomac.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus. And this is Undomesticated, the podcast where we aren't just saying the quiet parts out loud.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. If you're ready for some bold takes and a little bit of chaos, welcome to Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Monday. It is game day in Kansas City. Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Getting closer and closer to kickoff on a rainy day in Kansas City. Although I think it's supposed to be fine tonight once we get to kickoff. Of course, pregame begins 3 hours prior to kickoff tonight right here on 96.5. The Fan, Josh Briscoe, will have pregame and postgame here on your home for the Chiefs. You guys can interact with us over on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, X. And of course, subscribe on YouTube so you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, we'll have some folks from our sister station out in D.C. that are actually in town. They've been in town all weekend. Saw a lot of Commanders fans around KC and a lot of them in
town. I imagine that we've talked about this. Arrowhead is a destination location in a Monday night football game, and they had very, very, very high hopes for the Commanders team this year. So it makes sense.
Yeah, so Grant and Danny from 106.7 The Fan in D.C. will join us around 12:10. We'll get their perspective on the Commanders, who, of course, will be without Jaden Daniels tonight, and just their vibes on the game and their thoughts on Kansas City. And we'll see what they make of it. I said, I wish the weather would have been better for you guys in town. Trust me, it is not always cloudy.
It's October 27.
It's not always cloudy and rainy in Kansas City. I can promise
you're describing
that.
It like they were going to Miami and got rainy. Like,
no, but
it's October 27th in Kansas City. You know?
Anytime somebody comes into town, you don't want it to be cloudy and rainy for the 3 or 4 days that people are in your city.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, you know? I don't know. That's just weather.
Like, we're not Seattle is what I'm trying to get across. It's not cloudy and rainy every day.
Sure. I just didn't feel like an apology necessary. I'll also say the text line immediately picking on Drew. We will get to at some
about
point.
What? About what?
Well, the first two texts on the show were J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets. And oh boy, Drew, let's not waste any time. So we can get to that in a moment as well. But yeah, I think there's something too. And obviously we'll have to keep an eye on what comes from this game. And you and I have said this before. I thought this game was going to have like real juice. And so I'm curious from the Washington end as well, how seriously they're still taking it. Feels like they're in the trying to keep your head above water camp, which the Chiefs were at a couple of weeks ago when they started taking on the Lions. And weirdly enough, we'll talk about these games individually in just a second, Gold. But I got to say, this game, because of what the AFC did in general and what they were doing before this stuff, I will say they have to not let this game get away from them against Washington. They have to. Because at Bills, at Denver, and against the Colts are their next three games. There's no messing around against Washington tonight. We can talk about what those teams did, where those teams stand, and all the other stuff. But because of what they did, because they all kicked the ass of the opponent they have, they can't be screwing around against Washington. This game is really important for Kansas City, even if it doesn't have the same buzz, even if it is Marcus Mariota. They can't be screwing around and getting back to .500 and all this other stuff.
And that's why I'm not worried about this being a look past the commander spot for the team, look ahead to the Buffalo Bills next week in Buffalo, or later this week, I guess, essentially, in Buffalo, because of what you just laid out there. You're a team that is 4-3. You can't fall back down to .500. You already dug yourself a hole with the 0-2 start. And you do know the gauntlet of a schedule that is ahead for you, Buffalo and Denver and Indy and these teams here over the next month or so. So that's why I know fans, it might be easy to say, all right, look, no Jaden Daniels, 12-point favorites. Let's get to Buffalo. I'm not worried about anybody in that building tonight, though, and on that field tonight thinking that way. Because
they can't.
If they were 7-0 or 6-1 or whatever, you know what I mean? Like that's a different story. When you're 4-3, I don't think you're really looking past anybody. I think you recognize like, no, we've been got three times already, if you're the Chiefs, you're saying. And you definitely can't, and you look past the Commanders team that they do get Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel back tonight. Like and their running back's not too bad either in Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt. They've got some weapons there. You of course get a break the fact you're not facing off with a quarterback that is so dynamic. Instead you get a guy that's been a backup for the last 5 years or so in the NFL.
No, and I do genuinely understand it. Like this would be under normal circumstances, not a trap game, but like you said, maybe a look ahead game where you can see, and at least as fans, right, looking ahead in the sense you're like, ooh, Bills just lost Ed Oliver and they haven't looked quite the same. And what are we expecting? And they got to go to Orchard Park this time. And that would be a game before the Broncos, and they've got a bye week. But the Broncos game, the way they're playing right now, that game is huge. It might be the biggest game on their schedule all of a sudden. It might be bigger than the Bills game. And so I could see all of that. But the Commanders do still have stuff that can get you in trouble. Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, as good of a job as they've done controlling running backs, and they have, is still a guy who can break off a 70-yard run. That can swing tides in a game. So that's part of a problem. They're getting Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel a full go for the first time maybe all season, something we can also talk about with our guest coming up in the noon hour. So, like, they are more dangerous than they've been the last couple of weeks where they've looked mediocre at best, probably, to go with it. There's just a lot of pressure to keep winning. The Chiefs, and this is for the first time I feel like in years, Gold, are not going to have any leeway. They could have lost games at any time over the last couple of seasons, and it wouldn't have really fundamentally changed much from where they are. They can't afford that because of the three losses and because everyone in the AFC keeps winning ahead of them. If they lose tonight, they still won't be in the playoff field. If they win tonight, they'll be the 7 seed. Like, so they don't even have the leeway of like where they currently stand amongst the AFC teams. They would still just be because the Jags are on a bye. They would still just be the 7 seed, Gold, if they win this game tonight. Lining up against the Colts on the road. So, yeah, I don't take this game lightly in any way. And there are some parts that scare me. Is Krosky Merritt? I think the McLaurin Deebo thing scares me enough that if you got their playmakers, you get it in their hands, they should find a way to move the offense if those guys play really well.
I'm not as worried about Krosky Merritt or Bill, as they call him in D.C. I'm not as worried about him because the Chiefs have had a good track record this year going up against running backs that have, frankly, more pedigree than he does. You know, Saquon Barkley, a win for Philadelphia did not go off against them. Derrick Henry did not. Travis Etienne didn't. Jameer Gibbs didn't.
No. Jonathan Taylor's going to be the real test in a couple weeks.
Ashton Gentry didn't. So as much as we understand the interior of this defensive line is a problem for Kansas City in depth and getting after the quarterback, they have been good against the run. So I think the Chiefs will once again be able to slow down Krosky Merritt. It'll be whether or not Deebo Samuel being back and the different ways they will utilize him. Cliff Kingsbury, you know Debo's going to line up in the backfield at times.
Yep.
You know, that's why we were doing our best bets earlier for social content later on today. And I think, you know, Deebo over 10 yards rushing is like 2-1. I love that bet tonight. I think he's going to end up getting 10 yards rushing at
some point.
They're
certainly going to give him a chance.
They'll get creative with it with Deebo. And then Terry McLaurin is one of the better wide receivers in football. The question will be, can Marcus Mariota get him the football on a consistent basis?
Here's Marcus Mariota's. I think this is actually kind of interesting to look at because he's played in a varied set of games, obviously, over his now backup career. He started the last 3 games for Washington, and he started 3 games for them last year. This is what he's been statistically in those games. Last week, he went 4-for-10 for 63 yards against Dallas. Pretty bad, as you can imagine. But that was partially because of the injury stuff. He started a game against Atlanta earlier this year where he went 16 of 27 for 156 yards and 2 touchdowns. He started a game against the Raiders in which they won easily, 15 of 21 for 207 and a touchdown. So maybe he got him there. And then last year, he threw for 161 and 205 yards. He actually didn't start the other game against Cleveland. He just came in for 3 passes. So he's averaging like 150 yards a game. Like, it shouldn't be hard to hold Marcus Mariota down. The last time, Gold, he threw for more than 207 yards was 2022 overtime against Carolina. So it took 5 full-ass quarters to get him over 253 yards. If Washington does something against the Chiefs tonight, it's not with Mariota. It is on the ground. It is Deebo Samuel. It is Krosky Merritt. it is like it is decidedly not through the air with Mariota.
Well, quarterbacks, I was talking this weekend about it with some people, and like quarterback wise, the Chiefs on the ground is where they've actually struggled. I mean, Trevor Lawrence in the Jags game, you know, was a quarterback that had success against him. Justin Herbert earlier in the season, you know, was able to run on them. And so that's where I would be interested to see. And I don't know what the mobility is at this point for Marcus at this point in his career, but how do the Chiefs handle that if he goes and tries to run a little bit? You know, I was looking at his rushing numbers so far this year. Nothing crazy, but 6 attempts for 40 against the Raiders, 2 for 20 against Atlanta, and 2 for 34 against the Dallas Cowboys back on the 19th last week. So that's an area where can the Chiefs maintain that? You don't want this to be a game where we're frustrated late and it's like Trevor Lawrence where somehow he's able to take off and third and 10 and get some runs. That would be actually more concerning to me than anything else.
Justin Herbert run on them. They've had a hard time containing quarterbacks, but that's a long since staple of their defense. Is that just the way Spags' defense is set up because of where they spent their stuff and all this other stuff? I don't know. It's kind of a weird mix, I would guess, outside of it. And I can't figure out which portion of it we think is going to take place. But you're right. Look, I mean, on paper, this should be, I don't know, not like a Raiders-esque beatdown, but like the Chiefs are 10, 15, 14 points better than this team. And so like there is part of me that thinks this should be a team you handle easily. And Marcus Mariota, oh no, he runs for a first down. Uh-oh, what do they do? They just don't have, like they have weapons. McCorn, Deebo Samuel, the running game, like they do have weapons, but they have a sketchy offensive line, a backup quarterback, and I do still think that they've got problems from where they are. I will say the one thing that goes in their favor is they're desperate. We have to admit, they're desperate, right? Very desperate.
Well, what they have coming up, too. I mean, based on their schedule, this is why last week was so important for them. They needed to win. But taking a look, I mean, they just played the Cowboys last week. That was a game they needed to win because they got the Chiefs, the Seahawks, the Lions as their next three games. And this is a Commanders team that's already sitting at 3-4. So realistically, they could drop 3 in a row. And they could, all of a sudden, they could be sitting at 3-7 very quickly.
I mean, yes. And that's the problem. It's that how long are they expecting until Jaden Daniels comes back?
We'll have to ask our guests that. I don't know. Yeah.
Because that's the other part of this. Because like this week, three guys are expected to return for their respective teams. Like Lamar Jackson's supposed to play on Thursday and they're expecting Kyler Murray to come back. But like, how long are you going to be without Jaden Daniels? Because that's the key to this whole thing. It's weird in a year where like Washington, he's actually played okay, Gold. It's the rest of the thing and the sophomore slump. And he hasn't been as good. He hasn't been electric like he was last year. But he's certainly been a good NFL player. I'm curious. There's lots of stuff to still watch for the Chiefs. How much does Rashee Rice play? Do they actually give Rashard Smith the ball more? Can their offensive line hold up? All things that we'll discuss throughout the show, because they're going to be without both two starting offensive linemen. And that's a whole nother issue to go with it. And so we'll discuss all those things and more, obviously, based on where they are. But it's a lot of pressure for tonight. I love people over on Twitch. They already said the same thing you said before the show. They love a game day Cody and Gold, you know?
I love the game day shows, man. And I apologize. Text line's not working for me right now, so I don't have access to the text line. I don't know what's going on. We also have buzz in our headphones. It's a weird Monday. The ghosts are out. Halloween week. We've got buzzing in our headphones.
Spooky.
And the text line's not working. So that part I don't like about a game day show. That's odd today on a Monday. But in general, there's a couple times a year we get to do shows on game days. And yeah, I think it has some added juice. I love that. And you can, you know, whether you're going to Quick Trip this morning or wherever, everybody's wearing red. Everybody's got their Chiefs gear on. I like a weekday game in that regard.
No, I don't blame you, at least on that end. Meanwhile, I'm sure there were a lot of college football fans excited for their locals to take each other on. We will get to Kansas State in a minute. Did not go great for Kansas. If you're a K-State fan, I imagine you're feeling very good on this Monday morning. But MU dropping to Vandy yesterday and losing Pribula at the same time. They're done. And once again, we got to have another year where none of the locals are going to be in the college football playoff. They let 12 teams in this thing. And we can't find a way to get KU, K-State, or MU playing in a college football playoff. I've told you that that's something that I want to see out of the growth out of the locals. And MU certainly had a huge chance with Vandy in that game. They cannot, and their offense has gone to sleep. The second teams had figured out how to slow down Hardy. You slow down Hardy, and there is nothing left offensively for them in that game. And as much as they were in that game the entire time, as in Vandy wasn't going to just like run away with it because their defense will keep them in a lot of football
Missouri's
games.
Defense is legit.
We go back to like all of this is like sometimes what happens in college football is once you start facing good opponents, we forget about the storyline going into the year, which is, does Missouri have a quarterback that they trust? Does Missouri have a quarterback that they like? Are they in a really dangerous spot in this situation? And then you get into like real opponents, ranked opponents, and we're like, oh yeah, the quarterback situation is not very good, and it's going to hold them back the entire year. And as a result of that, Missouri will end up in the
Duke Mayo Bowl.
Cheez-Its Bowl or whatever. Yeah, the Duke Mayo Bowl. Look, let's be done with it.
Missouri's defense is still going to allow them to be in a lot of games. But their schedule, while the overall schedule at the end of the year is going to look like a top 10 or 15 schedule in the country. That's a fact. But what is also a fact is the first month and a half of the schedule was not anywhere near that. It just wasn't. It just wasn't. We talked about this going into the Alabama game, that they had not seen a team, frankly, that could really pass on a regular basis other than that point than Kansas and South Carolina. And it was a soft start to the schedule. Alabama, they were right there against Alabama. Ty Simpson made a player too late. This past week, of course, the injury doesn't help late in the game with Prabula, no doubt, and all of a sudden you're asking a true freshman to come, and he actually, considering the circumstance, he really wasn't the quote-unquote problem, except for the last drive where he didn't give his wide receivers any chance, but that was, you're up against the clock,
and that's a mess. Freshman and everything else.
But yeah, I think the schedule played a role. They don't have a deep passing threat, clearly. We discussed that last couple weeks, and so you're facing some better competition, and now, you know, I don't think they're losing out, you know, but they have A&M still on the schedule. And A&M looks like a team that could be playing for a national title the way things are trending for them and Marcel Reed right now. They got Oklahoma still on the schedule. And I know OU's coming off an unimpressive performance this past week against Ole Miss. And so there's a chance that they can win another game or two down the stretch. They got Mississippi State. They got Arkansas. Like, this is not going to really fall apart on them. But college football playoff, we knew it was kind of a play out game on Saturday for Vandy and Mizzou. And you lose the game, so you drop down to like a 10% chance anyway, and then your starting quarterback is hurt. So, yeah, it is over for Missouri from the college football playoff standpoint. And yet again, this is 2 years in a row where out of the locals, you would have thought Missouri was best positioned based off of their schedule and everything to get there, and it's not going to happen.
I will say, it wouldn't have mattered if Prabula was healthy. I said this to Carrington, I think, on Friday, because he was pumping out his chest. He was telling Goal that he wished his team would know what it's like to experience winning a big road game in your conference. Is exactly the way he put it. I am not editorializing this. This is exactly how he said it, pretty much to Gold.
Yeah.
And he was talking about this, and I said, my issue is that, and we had talked about it on the show, is like, if they don't beat Vanderbilt, well, then they're not winning out with Bo Prabula. Like, the thing is like, they could have him healthy. They're not beating everyone left on their schedule. They got multiple difficult opponents left. They weren't going to beat them all if they can't beat Vanderbilt on the road with them. That's just not the way it was ever going to go down. They had to have this win to make the college football playoff. Vanderbilt's in great shape now to make the college football playoff. They won't necessarily be
guaranteed like a 60% chance or so
50,
to make it.
I think is what they said on the game broadcast.
They're in great shape. They're in great shape to go with it. And like it's an impossibly interesting top 10. Indiana at 2. And then Ole Miss, I think, even, like, they're a good program, but, like, not one I always expect to be in the top 10.
They've been better than A&M recently, so A&M being in there is a surprise, too, if you think Ole Miss is a surprise.
Yeah,
I think.
Georgia Tech at 8, Vandy at 9. Like, you know, it's an interesting mix of teams. And then even, like, the Big 12. We don't know what's going to happen, but it's probably between
Big
BYU 12 and
just,
Texas Tech.
Big 12 is just crazy. Like,
it's nuts.
Is Cincinnati, like, in BYU, the two best teams in the conference? Every week it changes. It's crazy in the Big 12 right now. And it's why, you know, from a bigger picture, we talk about how many bids they're going to get and all that for the playoff. It's just, this is why. Like, everybody's beating up on each other. There's no real consistency. And now it looks like BYU's young, true freshman quarterback is starting to come along.
Bear
and they look like, you know, they're going to be a force to bear. Yeah, bear.
Number 47.
Yeah, how about that for a quarterback?
That was still 40. One of the most interesting. Like,
his brother played at Boise State, Hank Bachmeier.
When you think about just like the dynamics of like the religion aspect of the school and all that stuff, that's still one of the most interesting NIL deals of all time. Right? Like BYU.
There's plenty of money at that university.
I know.
I know. An insane amount of money, actually.
You think? But it's NIL, just moves the needle. And yeah, the Big 12's a mess and everything else. It's been interesting for college football. But yeah, Missouri, back-to-back weeks, had a chance to get huge wins. And they could not move football.
You mean, they beat Auburn last week.
Yeah, sorry.
The week before against Alabama. Yeah,
two of the last three weeks had a chance. And like in all three of those games, in closing time in the fourth quarter, could go down the field and tie it, could go down the field, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, could do, like, could have those moments. Not that they're not in games. They'll be in every game probably the rest of the way, even with a true freshman quarterback. Now, of course, obviously they wish they didn't lose both quarterbacks, and they could have maybe leaned on a, you know, the kid, I can't remember his name now, the baseball player.
Horn.
Yeah, who they lost earlier.
Zollers might be better than Sam Horn anyway, so I think it's okay.
I mean, they weren't treating it like that, other than the fact, I guess, you know what, in fairness, teams treat that differently. They might think he's more talented, but true freshmen typically would be behind on the depth chart anyway, so that's not fair. Meanwhile, Drew, the text line does want to
I'm so upset
discuss.
I don't have the text line available to me, because I wanted to see it today, because I knew it would be a fun text line, and I have no access to it currently, which is, honestly, is unfortunate.
And because they know that, they're sending in all kinds of different stuff. One text says, Alex Gold is the greatest host and has such a big vehicle, is the way they put it on the text line, all over the place, at least on that end. And then talking about some of the college thing. All right, so first, we're not going to play the audio at the moment because we're having a little bit of audio stuff that's different.
Yeah.
Before we talk about Cincinnati's into this, I thought, what a rare glimpse of honesty Justin Fields gave us in postgame when he talked about the real and severe mental difficulties he was having adjusting and having his trouble in the NFL and like crying in his closet and all this stuff. There was a real vulnerable moment that I thought was very cool and he didn't have to do and speaks to probably the mindset of an athlete and how difficult of a job it is. I thought that was really cool.
It was.
It made you feel good for Justin Fields getting the win, made you feel good for Aaron Glenn getting the win. It was easy to be rooting for the Jets in that moment. Cincinnati has the worst defense in football, and the AFC North has the worst defensive grouping in football. Steelers can't stop anyone. Ravens can't stop anyone. Bengals can't stop anyone. Every game is going to be 40-40. Cincinnati was up 16 at near the end of the third quarter and lost to the winless Jets. They're done, Drew. Just say they're done, and then everyone will leave you alone. That's all it takes.
Why are we talking about this team today?
I don't know. You're a Bengals fan, and you're the producer of our show.
You can't. So it can't go both ways. It can't be last Thursday they win, and Friday you come in with sunglasses on and a hoodie, and all happy, and then today act like it doesn't matter, and you don't care, and the Bengals don't impact you at all. It matters because we have a show bet on the line, Drew. It matters with the show bet, and you guys know I can't stand Cincinnati. That's why it matters. But the Chiefs and the folks in Kansas City enjoy seeing them lose.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
You and I and Cody have a bet involving wearing a Hooters outfit. So you're damn right I'm happy Cincinnati lost.
That was an important loss for that bet.
Very important.
Honestly.
It could be the difference.
What the hell?
They gave the win right back. The benefit they got out of beating Pittsburgh, they gave right back the next week.
And thankfully, Green Bay beat Pittsburgh, so they're still a game and a half back of the division.
Yeah, they aren't. Look, game wise, they're not. But their defense is wretched. Wretched. And Joe Burrow's still not going to be back till what, mid-December? What's the
estimate? Yeah, December 14th.
Yep.
Okay. Mid-December. So if they can stay afloat, maybe there's some path. Do they get the Steelers in those last like couple of weeks?
They have the Steelers in 2 weeks.
I'm just trying to figure out which way they can do.
Yeah, all I'm saying, the offense looks way better for Cincy, and it's fun for you to watch, and it's
oh,
fun.
Oh, yeah, Joe Flacco immediately using all the weapons. They're going to score points probably with Joe Flacco.
But again, it was a problem at halftime when Justin Fields already had 13 points. That was a bad sign. It was a very bad sign for them. We had a group text going. We all acknowledged that at the time. Like, that's not a good – as good as the offense was, is a problem if Justin Fields out of nowhere is putting up 13, let alone ended up putting, what was it, 40?
I think in retrospect for Cincinnati, and this is why I said they weren't a playoff team going into the year before the Joe Burrow injury and all this other stuff. Their problem, they thought, and this happens all the time with teams. This is not like unique to Cincinnati. They thought, well, a lot of teams thought, Lou Anarumo's the problem. We're going to get this guy out and we're going to figure it out. And it turns out his defense is fine and he's having no trouble there keeping the points down in Indianapolis. And instead, the problem is the Bengals are one of the worst talented defensive teams in the league. They don't have much of a pass rush. They don't have much of a secondary, and their linebackers are poor. And as a result of that, they currently rank dead last in points per game allowed, including allowing an absolute bucket of points to the Jets, who couldn't score against anybody. And so now they're stuck in a tough spot. Yeah. I did really
only
like
the Titans have a worse point differential than they do in football.
I will say, Drew, I think you are a positive person in general. So I think sometimes it's tough when we come in here and pick on your Cincinnati Bengals.
And it's good to
but
be positive,
say,
by the way.
I do think that you are genuine when you say things like, I'm happy for Aaron Glenn, and I'm glad.
Oh,
you know,
100%.
Like,
I think you're
genuine when you say stuff like that.
During all 32 2 weeks ago, I think, or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, like, I felt like Aaron Glenn's the guy, and he's already got a culture shift there. Like, they've been in almost every single game outside of maybe two of them that they've lost. Like, they very easily could be, you flip the script on that Steelers game when they scored 32 points against the Steelers. Like, one thing goes differently. They blew the game against the Buccaneers, otherwise they'd have a win there. Like, it feels like they're, like, this is a win that feels like a culture change where all of a sudden, hey, there's more positivity going into the building. Like, people forget, like, Dan Campbell, everybody thinks is one of the best coaches in football. He went 3-13 his first season.
Yeah.
Who's to say that Aaron Glenn can't do a similar thing? Like,
he's going to need to find the quarterback.
Like, I don't want to go
again.
Out,
that's the optimistic approach. That's fine. Again, that like citing the one outlier of the last 15 coach hires would be the positive spin on it. That's
fine. Why would you? But you can't say that it's, well, they need to fire him after this year because it's not working when it has worked before with other coaches. So why not Aaron Glenn,
who was in the same system as Dan
Campbell? Yeah, I'm not saying they need to fire him. I'm just saying, like, citing the Dan Campbell example again. Cody just said it. It's a very positive outlook on the situation. Like, that's not the norm, though, right? That the norm is not that you go 3-13 your first year and then now suddenly you're a juggernaut in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying, the Jets turning it around, I'm not saying he'll be Dan Campbell, but figuring it out for the Jets, what does that look like? Finding a way to maybe make the playoffs and go 9-8 or 10-7 every year. Like, that's turning it around more than, like, what Dan Campbell's done. Plus, he comes from the same little system. I feel like there's some parallels that make sense for the comparison.
The Jets are on the bye, and then they get the Browns, the Patriots, and the Ravens. We'll find out if they really turn the corner in a couple weeks.
Yeah, like, and look, the same thing, like, Drew, your argument in that case is a little bit flawed in the sense, like, well, it's worked one time, but a team could just say, but 9 times out of 10, it doesn't. And so we'll just say that we're a part of the 90%.
Well, yeah, I get it. I'm just saying that it feels like he's already establishing, like, an identity with the celebrating and with, I think he's, being a former player, like, he's cut from the same ilk as that of a Dan Campbell or a Mike Vrabel, where he's been there and done that he's done what the players are trying to do. So I think there's a different aspect of that that comes across, I think, differently for players. And when you're losing, it obviously is tough. But I mean, there's a reason for people to celebrate in New York and be happy.
Oh, yeah, that's a different conversation. They should be happy today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They got their first win. That's a different conversation than saying it's going to work out or whatever. I mean, they still are also 5 days removed from their owner stirring the pot about their own starting quarterback and saying, you know, it's hard when you have a quarterback with the rating we have. Like, owners saying that publicly, I don't know if this solves, if this cures all.
And a guy who just openly admitted to having trouble with that. Mondays, by the way, Monday's football coverage is presented by Busey Bank, where they're focused on your success. At Busey Bank, they've been building business and growing wealth since 1868. Learn more at buseybank.com.
All right, up next, let's talk about the rest of the AFC. We wanted to see what Buffalo looked like off a bye. We got our answer. We wanted to see what the Broncos would do after a come-from-behind win. We got our answer. And we will talk about the Sunflower Showdown and the result for a 17th straight year.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard-Bassett, former Real Housewife of Potomac.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, author of the New York Times bestseller, I Can't Date Jesus. And this is Undomesticated, the podcast where we aren't just saying the quiet parts out loud.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. If you're ready for some bold takes and a little bit of chaos, welcome to Undomesticated. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Here. All right, just getting started here on a Monday. We'll get into the KU K-State game in about 8 minutes or so. Sunflower Showdown and Lawrence, an absolute embarrassment if you were on the Kansas side of things.
If you were on the Kansas State side of the things.
Oh, you're feeling great. You should.
Easy, coasty win on a Saturday afternoon. You know, slight difference, at least between the two. But yeah, I would say hard to complain, at least on that end, if you're a Kansas State fan. But we will talk about it here momentarily.
On Friday, we said, hey, I want to see what the Bills look like out of the bye week, in particular their defense, because the defense has allowed just about everybody to stay in games. Wanted to see what adjustments they make. They get the Carolina Panthers, who had 4 wins going into the game, and they still have 4 wins because they got destroyed by Buffalo. Andy Dalton had no chance throughout much of the day.
Nope.
We can get a bigger picture with Buffalo, too, because Ed Oliver now looks like he's done for the season with a torn bicep, I think it was.
They're saying out indefinitely. They're not calling it done for the season, but he's
not expected
not to
playing
miss some serious time.
Next week against the Chiefs. Let's put it that way. So let's start with Buffalo and we can get it to Denver. I thought the Bills, you want to see it, the confirmation of it another week, therefore against Kansas City. But that was a performance that I think calms the waters a little bit if you're looking at Buffalo. Like, the offense and James Cook, what he's capable of with Josh Allen. But their defense against Andy Dalton needed to have a dominant performance. And boy, they were as dominant as you could possibly ask for if you're a Bills fan. And so, when they're one of the teams we're all keeping an eye on in the number one seed conversation. They're also in a battle with the Patriots in the AFC East. And their defense, we can call it adjustments in the bye, or was it just their play and Andy Dalton? I don't know. We're going to find out when the Chiefs face off with them. But that is why when we did the exercise about when's the next Chiefs loss coming,
the Bills are still an answer.
I said the Bills, but I want to see what they look like against Carolina. I'll stick with my answer being that.
I think look, at Buffalo is still a huge win, which goes back to the lead, what we're talking about. Like, that's why this game is still incredibly important. This is why, look, it's still the Panthers. So I was never going to write the Bills off entirely. You and I had essentially said we'd given our rankings for the teams that we worried about the most. Josh Allen didn't have to lift a finger in that game. James Cook ran all over Carolina. Josh Allen finished with 163 yards passing. He didn't even have to do anything.
I had the 2 rushing touchdowns, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they were short. Yeah. I'm just saying he didn't have to do much. I guess it was 3 carries, 7 yards, 2 touchdowns. Yes, but like James Cook could have had those all
James
the
Cook
same.
Was awesome yesterday.
Yeah, he was incredible that entire stretch. Their problems are still their problems. I don't think a serious Super Bowl contending team with some defensive deficiencies, Gold, can go into a playoff game with Khalil Shakir being their number one or Keon Coleman being their number one. I still think that they've got some offensive issues that they're going to have to deal with at some point. But every single team in the AFC who we take seriously destroyed their opponent. The Bills won by 31. The Colts, who, by the way, I don't know if you guys are assuming we're on there. I'm done doubting entirely. They are one of the 3 best teams in the AFC, and that's fine. Like, I'm just done questioning them in any regard. We can put it up versus opponent. They beat the Chargers by 2 touchdowns. They beat Denver, a team we take very seriously. And every bad team they faced, they ruin.
I was
going
to say,
they
just did this to Tennessee yesterday.
No. I wanted to see it like week after week. I'm done. Like, it just took me too long to come around. It's not that it was Tennessee that they did it for. It's just, it took me too long to come around on the Colts. They're one of the 3 best teams in the AFC. They've proven it over and over and over and over again. The bad teams they face, they ruin. The good teams they face, they still beat. And so I'll give them credit that I probably should have given them credit for weeks ago. They are one of the best teams.
No, the results are the results. Yeah. I still think they're likely going to be the Minnesota Vikings of last year, where they're going to win 12 to 14 games and then be very quickly one and done. Daniel Jones, to me, let's see, is he still playing this way? Right now, they're able to because they're able to run the ball. What happens when Daniel Jones has... You're right, they are blowing out opponents. What happens when they're in a neck-and-neck game with the Chiefs or somebody like that, and they need Daniel Jones to make a play? Not when they got a cushion. It's very easy to play quarterback when you're up by 14 and 17 on a consistent basis, which they get credit for being in those spots. I'm not downgrading that. But at the same time, what happens when they're in a tight game and Daniel Jones has to make a game-winning drive? Have they been in that spot at all this year?
Denver, who they eventually was the penalty and then the missed kick.
Missed kick.
They did score before that in order to go up. That would be the one. And Denver is obviously a very good football team, so we're not outside of that. The one difference I'll say between the Minnesota comp and this year's team is Minnesota was very good last year and was scoring
114
and winning a lot of games, and they won their first 5 and all that other stuff before, like, and won a bunch. The Vikings offense is nowhere close to what the Colts offense is doing this year. The Colts offense is doing like,
well, because Jonathan Taylor is
2018 stats. I mean, they're putting up massive numbers
because Jonathan Taylor is playing better than any running back in football right
sure.
now.
Sure, he's got 12 touchdowns and a million other stats to go with it. That's the big difference to me between Minnesota last year and Indianapolis this year is Indianapolis's offense is performing like one of the best offenses of the last decade. Do I for sure think that they're going to do that for the entire stretch? No, not necessarily. But like they are deserving of their crown. Denver housed their opponent, and Dallas is a team that I absolutely think can get you. And they didn't get got by them. Yeah, their defense is really bad.
Yeah.
And they're going to trade for a defensive lineman, you know, and they're going to have to because of outside of there. But like the more and more I look at these teams in the AFC, they all made a statement of like, we're not going to just go away easily for Kansas City. Right. They all did that yesterday. Like, we're not going to just all lose a couple of games and just let them walk back into the conversation. Yet.
The biggest issue is Denver and you know, where they're at in the AFC West and sitting there at six wins already. Now, you haven't played them at all. You still have two games against them if you're Kansas City. But that's the biggest issue. I thought
they got jump started. Yeah.
We said it last week. The Giants game, when you come back like that, to me, that is something that can propel you for weeks and weeks. And at least for 1 week, it absolutely did that. And yeah, the Cowboys defense flat out stinks. But the Broncos also held back an offense in Dallas that has been really, really good. One of the best offenses in football. I mean, Dak Prescott, prior to this game, was playing at an MVP level. CeeDee Lamb is back now for 2 weeks, and George Pickens been playing great, and Javonte Williams been great, and that didn't matter. The Broncos shut them down also offensively. So you can push back on the Broncos offense a little bit and what they did against a terrible defense, but what was more impressive is the Broncos defense, as we expect, showed why they're one of the best, and they held in check a Dallas Cowboys offense that nobody really has been able to have that happen to. So that was very impressive. I still think if you're asking who am I worried about, Broncos or the Colts, I'm more worried about the Broncos because they're, of course, in their division, and that could impact you getting a home playoff game or not.
Yeah, it depends on, like, they're the team I have to pay more attention to, but as far as a bigger threat, I think the Colts are a bigger threat to the, like, overall, the like Super Bowl part of it at the moment.
Call me a Colts hater. I'm still just like I
you're obviously extremely skeptical.
Yeah, and look, they got 7 wins. You don't luck into that, okay? And so that's fair. And I'm not saying they're not like Jonathan Taylor again playing great. Shane Steichen should be coach of the year. You know, Daniel Jones is playing at a very, very high level. We've discussed this. They got everybody has their own role and it works and all that. I'm just what happens when they have one bit of adversity? What one injury? What happens when they're in a really close game with one of the top AFC teams, you know, and Daniel Jones has to do it? You referenced the one time that happened, obviously, against Denver all the way back in like week 2 or whatever it was. You know, it was a blocked field goal.
It was early-ish in the season.
So that's all. Again, we'll have Indy in a couple weeks to talk about and everything. And yes, you can classify me as a Colts hater. It's more of a Colts skeptic, I think, than anything right now.
If they get the one seed, did Jonathan Taylor MVP?
No.
We've had this. We've done this.
He'll win offensive player of the year, but
he will not win MVP. We did this last year with Barkley. We did it 2 years ago after that, or before that, with Christian McCaffrey. Running backs, I'm not saying it's right, but if we're talking about winning the MVP market and bets and all that, running back is not winning MVP in the year 2025.
The truth is, it just depends on if we want to have the conversation or not. Do we want the only conversation to be had is, do you want to change the award? Not, will he win MVP?
He's not. Yeah.
No, that's no. Should he be considered for MVP? That's yes. We've already covered this. Mm-hmm. Will they change the rule? Probably not. Like, I saw Carrington and everybody else say the same thing. Like, what's the argument for Jonathan Taylor? There's not an argument. That's not the point we're trying to make here. There's obviously an incredibly strong argument for Jonathan Taylor to be the second highest or first highest MVP candidate. It's not how the game works. It's not how they vote for it. Yeah, you can run for 2,000 yards and they won't give it to you.
I will say this.
It kind of is what it is.
Jonathan Taylor has as many touchdowns as Saquon had the whole season last year already.
Yeah.
I know, man.
I think they're...
He had 2,000 yards.
No, I understand that. But if you couple, let's say he has 1,800 yards, but he has 25 touchdowns, how are you going to... I mean, which he's on pace for, by the way.
I just won't give it to
him. How do you argue it? Like, how do you... If they're the one seed and they're riding his coattails essentially to that.
They'll argue because it's a quarterback league and it is a quarterback.
But their quarterback, a lot of people think, is mid. So as a result, he is the most valuable player.
Yeah. Again, there's a debate. There's a debate to be had. It's just, I think the debate is more like, should this push him to change the award? Like, this conversation, because we've had it so many times over the years, like, I actually think it's become Like, and this is not directed at you. Like, and what you said, like, everybody on social media was discussing it. I think it's become a very boring conversation every year. Oh, well, this guy, can you believe that this guy is not getting enough attention and love for the running back? Yeah, I can, because I've seen it for three out of the last 5 years. And so unless you want to have the conversation that it needs to be called the quarterback of the year award, and then the offensive player of the year is truly everybody other than the quarterback, then that's what it needs to be. But Jonathan Taylor, I'm serious by saying this, has 0% chance to win the MVP. We might even get to a point in 5 weeks where he has the second best odds and people are going to say, wow, it might happen. You know why I know it's not? Because we did the exact same thing with Christian McCaffrey 3 years ago. Like, the most valuable player in any sport is what?
Quarterback.
And therefore, the NFL as a collective and medium voters and all this have decided that quarterbacks are going to win the most valuable player of the year award, and that's where we're at, especially in the year 2025. So Jonathan Taylor can win offensive player of the year. He has 0% chance to win MVP. It's just not happening.
Like the year he's talking about from Christian McCaffrey, he had 1,459 rushing yards, 14 rushing touchdowns, 564 receiving yards, and 7 receiving touchdowns.
Yeah, he's a 2,000 yard from scrimmage back,
and
it wasn't good enough.
And 21 touchdowns. And
Saquon last year didn't win.
What were the MVP numbers for the quarterback that year?
In 2023?
Mm-hmm.
Who won it in 2023?
Lamar.
It was Lamar Jackson. You knew that right off. As the resident Lamar Jackson hater.
He won two before. I love Lamar Jackson.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I was getting it mixed up. My bad.
Lamar, 3,600 yards, 24 touchdowns, 7 picks through the air, and then he also on the ground. I don't have those. But obviously that's a huge part of his game as well. Yeah.
Here, I can pull up his rushing stats. It's worth discussing.
I just wonder in terms of like the comparison to what the quarterback did. Like if it was a ridiculously good year.
821 yards and 5 touchdowns. So he had 4,100 total yards and like 30-something total touchdowns. It wasn't like astronomical.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't ludicrous.
Compared to the
following
year.
And Lamar, as I remember correctly, was the unanimous MVP that year, or at least won
it
pretty
handily. A quarterback. I don't know if it's Mahomes. I don't know if it's going to be Drake May, if it's going to be Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen. Or Daniel Jones, but it's not going to be Jonathan Taylor. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all I know. That I can definitively, I don't know who the hell is going to win it, but it's not Jonathan Taylor. It's not going to be, you know, any other non-quarterback.
I am kind of with you, though. It's like, the conversation is to just change. The only conversation I would have is, should they change the rule? Should they change what, or like how they had to add offensive lineman of the year? Mm. Like just, you know, like college has the Doak Walker Award. Just make an award for running backs. I don't care. Which we've all largely agreed is running back wide receiver award is offensive player of the year. We've all just kind of except for in the year in which two quarterbacks have astronomical numbers, then we agree that it's a quarterback one. You know, just change offensive player of the year to position players. MVP
quarterback of the year award, and then it's the quarterback of the year award. That's what it is.
I mean, unless we're going to change what the actual
they
thing
can call
is.
It the Tom Brady Award. I don't care. They can change the name and brand it and everything.
Oh,
Cody, I know you like that.
Now we can change names.
Well, because the MVP is not named after somebody, Cody, right? Yeah.
You know, honor the history of it never being named. It's like a Yankee player not having his name on the back, you know?
But only can keep Tom Brady for like 30 more years, and then Cody, we got to switch it, right?
Hell yeah.
That's what Cody wants.
Damn straight.
All right.
Damn straight.
Let's get back to college football for a little bit here, and then we'll get to the Chiefs at 11 o'clock and talk a little bit more about them. But KU lost for a 17th straight year to the Kansas State Wildcats in an embarrassing fashion too. It wasn't just, they didn't just lose close to Chris Klieman and the Cats, but Kansas went into halftime yet again in a competitive game. You're thinking, okay, back-to-back games. And then you get blown out in the second half. It was an embarrassing performance coming out of a bye week to your state rival. For that to happen at your place as well. Same old thing. Like, same old thing. 17 years of it, and K-State fans should be feeling great today. Their team's heading in a much different direction. For all those that were trying to say Chris Klieman should get fired, that looks stupid, doesn't it? Also, if you're saying Lance Leipold should be fired, that's pretty dumb. However, it appears there's a clear ceiling.
And he's reached it.
Lance Leipold as a college football coach at Kansas. That doesn't mean they need to fire him. I think we all recognize where this program has been long before Lance Leipold, and it is in a million times better of a spot than what it has been in most of our lifetimes. So that is, both things can be true. So we don't need to go crazy and say he should be fired tomorrow. But at the same time, I think there is clearly a limitation to where he can take the program from here. Stabilizer, program builder, all true. take you to the next level? I'm not so sure, man. I'm not so sure. When's the last big game you think he's won, really, for this program?
Not really. I mean, look.
Obviously, lost to Mizzou.
The bowl win they had a couple years ago.
That's probably about it. Right?
What's tough, Gold, is what you're saying are not in contradiction of each other, but do create a timeline of effects, which eventually leads to the first thing you said, which is him being fired. I don't disagree with you that the job he has done at Kansas in no way justifies his firing at all. It just doesn't. We know what their program was before. We know what their program is now. But if you get three more years of mediocrity, barely getting into a bowl game, barely missing a bowl game, and you're just stuck in this sludge of 6-6, essentially, in the college football end, you will eventually have to make a move in order to try to get a higher ceiling. I'm not going to forget what he was walking into. And that it typically takes time to build a program, although less time than it used to, seemingly, because of NIL, and teams have been a little bit better about switching franchises' fate a little faster. I'm not saying everybody, but there are some examples of that. This is just a case of Jalen Daniels played his worst game of the year,
yeah,
and Avery Johnson played his best game as a member of the Kansas State Wildcats. He was amazing in that game. He was awesome and near perfect, and as a result of that, they boat raced Kansas. And so Klieman feels better today. Leipold feels worse. I don't feel dramatically different about the where either team is, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, bowl game stumbling. Look, Kansas probably still, to me, finishes with 6 wins, and they end up in the Independence Bowl or something. That feels like that's where this thing is trending. I think a lot of the frustration is, too, when Lance Leipold has been as outspoken as he has about fan support. He is not hidden behind that. He, for the last couple of years, has mentioned, feels like they need more fan support and they don't get enough of it. And, basically, essentially, they built this guy a stadium. I mean, I know the program needed it, but, that was a big reason why he stuck around. If you didn't get him a stadium, he was probably leaving. So he did all that. Fan support's been great this year, and then here's where you're at. And I don't think any reasonable KU fan is suggesting that they should be all of a sudden a 10-win every game, every season type of program. I don't think anybody's saying that that's what they're asking for. But to also sit there and say, all right, we got all these limitations, and we should just be happy with getting to 6 wins every year, that's kind of a loser mentality at this point. You have all the facilities, you have great fan support. I just saw Rob walk in. Rob's out there freezing his ass off in the rain for these guys as well.
Yep.
So saying that 6 wins and we should be happy would be is crazy. That should not be okay just because of prior history.
No, still have Jalen Daniels, still have teams and players. You didn't lose your starting quarterback. In years like that, last year, right, where you're rolling out all kinds of different things and you don't have your normal stuff, you can take a scrappy year if you're Kansas and get in there. And look, Kansas State, their season had already fallen apart by what their expectation going into
they're supposed to be
the
Big 12 title game.
Was.
And there's still a path, believe it or not, for them.
What? For real?
If they,
three teams.
If they beat Texas Tech and then you look at it, there is a path, long road, but there is a path for them to still get
there. Going to take some upsets in the Big 12, but certainly they're not out of it. But they've already fallen short of what their season-long expectations were. So they're already in a spot where it's a disappointing year for them. They salvaged part of it by beating the hell out of Kansas. And look, this is the thing. Kansas is out of the let's mock them like they're the Jets of college football. They've graduated from that. But you can't take them seriously as a Power Four football conference until they can do things like not get beat by one team for 17 straight years. They got to get out of that. They got to get out of that loop. They got to get out of that cycle, or they're just going to be stuck in no man's land in college football. It's not a more fun place to be. And it'll get harder to get recruits because it feels like you're not going
anywhere. That's the other bummer, I think.
And you can backslide a little bit,
For a lot of, fans on the Kansas side, I can only speak for that. Obviously, K-State's a different feeling, but they had a huge number of recruits there as well. So you always wonder about, when you see, you have this nice stadium now, and then you get embarrassed in that way. It's a nationally televised game on TNT and everything, and you had a huge grouping of recruits there for a rivalry game. And then the in-state rival, in a lot of cases, I'm guessing they're also recruiting some of the similar player, and they see that team kick your ass in your building. It's a bad look. It's just a really bad look, and could have some serious ramifications on the recruiting trail as well. I mean, Lance Leipold even called it a major step backwards. So it's bad vibes right now.
We'll have to see how it goes. Lance Leipold currently has the 35th ranked class in the country, which shatters anything K-State's done with Chris Klieman. So I think
we'll see.
If they keep this class, I think people got to relax and be patient, because I understand it's a lot when we talk about the Big 12 being the type of conference that it is, where everywhere it's all about margins and the little things make a big difference, K-State is going through it this year. It's, you can knock the coach, but right now, how many other people want this Kansas job right now? Like, if you look at the top group of five coaches where Lance Leipold came from, they're not waiting for the Kansas job to be open. They're waiting for the SEC job to be open or the ACC job to be open. They're not waiting for Kansas to be open. So before people want to run him out of the building, he's got the best recruiting class they've had, maybe ever, coming in next season. I think, you know, you just see how it goes. That's kind of how things go with college football, where you have one down year and then a great year the next year, and then you fall back into another bad season. That's the way that the NIL era is looking right now. I mean, Florida State's a great example of that.
All right, coming up next, we will get to the 11 o'clock hour. Let's talk about the carousel that's taking place in college football, and it's going to be a wild one here in the next couple of months with another coach out, and we'll discuss the Chiefs, who are going to be missing two members on the offensive line. That's coming up here on Cody Ingold.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's up, guys? It's Candace Dillard Bassett.
And I'm Michael Arsenault, and this is Undomesticated.
We're putting it all on the kitchen table and inviting you to the function. Follow and listen to Undomesticated, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.